time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is nearly Friday, August 7th, 2015. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Ladies and gentlemen, the second of the Fox Republican presidential debates kicking off the 2016 presidential election finished moments ago. And what a night it's been. In addition to us being shut down by Fox News on multiple occasions, regardless of how we were streaming, but also reinterpreting the content, commenting on it, satirizing it, changing its value. And of course, in no way denying Fox their value, to the extent that they had any advertising on their TV, on their web stream, we were playing it. So the advertisers actually were probably getting even more value. Nevertheless, it's been a crazy evening, and who better than to talk to us about it but Cliff Schechter? And we will go to Cliff in just a moment. But I am very excited. Now, I feel like I can't even, I am slipping into Trumpese now when I do this. But I am very excited. Today's program is sponsored by Warby Parker. Now, if you've never heard of Warby Parker, maybe you don't need eyeglasses. I do. In fact, the eyeglasses I'm wearing right now, I got at the Warby Parker store when my sister said, you've got to get new glasses, and I'm taking you down there. And they were a great deal. Warby Parker believes that glasses should not cost as much as an iPhone. And I don't know if you've ever gotten glasses at most places. It can literally cost you like $600, $700, $900. So Warby Parker has created a new concept in eyewear that contemporary eyeglasses should be extremely affordable and fashion forward. And I think everybody knows I'm a fashion forward guy. They believe glasses should be viewed as a fashion accessory, like a bag or a shoe or a tie or a hat. At $95, they make it easy to accessorize with glasses. On top of the great price, all glasses include anti-reflective and anti-glare coating at no additional cost. Very important for me personally. I'm under the lights every day. And all glasses include a hard case and a cleaning cloth. The clean cloth, particularly important to me because I have a 2-year-old who thinks it's funny to smudge my glasses constantly. There are no additional items you'll need to purchase. And this is what's great about what Warby Parker provides for people who don't live near a Warby Parker store. They have a home try-on program. You order 5 pairs of glasses. They ship them directly to you for free. You can try all the frames on. You get a feel for them. Feedback from others. 5 pairs for 5 days. Mail them back to Warby Parker in a prepaid package. Go to warbyparker.com/majority to choose your 5 free home try-on frames. Now, I have done this. In fact, this weekend, we are putting on the Majority Report site at majority.fm pictures of me with my 5 glasses. And God help me, I'm going to put up a poll where you get to vote which glasses I should get. Don't make me sit on the poll all weekend hitting the ones that I want. But I think they're all actually sort of great. So I don't know if there's any chance for me to lose at all in that situation. So basically, you send the frames back. You choose your favorite pair or pairs and order. You visit that URL, warbyparker.com/majority, W-A-R-B-Y, parker.com/majority, and you will get free 3-day shipping on your final frame choice. Makes your experience completely risk-free, free shipping all around. And here's another great thing about Warby Parker. For every pair of glasses sold, they distribute a pair of glasses to someone in need. Go to warbyparker.com/majority today to check out these glasses. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. And here, you need me to play some music. Okay. I have Cliff music. I got it. Cliff, I'm sorry we're running so late, buddy. Cliff? Yeah, can you hear me? Oh, okay. All right. You there? Okay. We'll be on in just a sec. Sorry, buddy. All right. We'll be on in a second. All right, folks, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is just about casual Friday, and you know what that means. Even if we're just talking about the debate that finished with the Republicans, we still get to hear this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff Schechter. How are you, Cliff?
I'm doing well, Sam. How are you doing? Wondering a little bit about the future of the human race. Otherwise, doing well.
It's always a weird experience spending this much time with Republicans.
Just watching Fox News. I mean, I'm telling you, as I tweeted out, I think you watch an entire Republican debate, and you watch that focus group, and you when these people actually say what they really are thinking at a Fox News focus group, and you say to yourself, is it too late to give the dinosaurs another chance? Because I think maybe they were ripped off a bit. I think they deserve another shot at this whole thing here. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, and I think there's a good place to start in sort of let's look at this at 20,000 feet. When we heard today 3.5 hours with commercial breaks, so I don't know what that comes down to, but we heard from 17 Republicans, amongst whom there was virtually no disagreement. I mean, virtually no disagreement on policy. I guess, you know, what stands out to me, like things like Kasich said he doesn't hate gay people and he can live with it, even though he's against it. Rand Paul said one tiny facet of our surveillance state is problematic. I think at one point Jeb Bush may have said, like, he thinks there should be standards in education, and no one else said that explicitly. And to be fair, Lindsey Graham wants to invade Syria. But aside from that, over the course of 3.5 hours, we heard there was basically two generalizations. Virtually no difference in policy between the Republicans and virtually no policy. I mean,
everything is platitudes. God talks to all of them.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true, yes.
By the way, can I just say, and, you know, I know we're not on terrestrial radio here, so let's just say it. Was that not the dumbest fucking question in the history of all debates? I mean, can you really ask that question about do you talk to God? You know, I thought next you'd be like, so when you're younger, you had an imaginary friend. Does he explain to you about how maybe he can come and be an advisor on how to fix our healthcare system? You know, has the Easter Bunny talked to you lately and maybe given you a few tips on what we should do with that whole thing in Iran? I mean, can you honestly, I mean, I'm kidding, and yet, really, you're in a national debate, you can ask a question like that? I mean, God.
Well, I guess my third generalization is we got a very good perspective on exactly how Fox dumbs down and has dumbed down the discourse in this country.
Fantastic point.
Because it's one thing, you know, I remember when George Bush was asked the question, who is your favorite philosopher back in 2000? And he said Jesus. And people were like, wow, that's a little weird. And now that seems like, I mean, now you've
it's
got
totally
the moderator
normal.
Saying, never mind giving you an opportunity to say that Jesus is your favorite philosopher. When was the last time you talked to God? I mean, it makes George Bush's response.
It's insulting. All right. I don't care what your beliefs are. You know, I'm not questioning religion. People who are religious and have religious beliefs. And, you know, so don't, I hope people don't take it that way. It's different, though, your spirituality versus, you know, some guy pointing up to heaven after they make a Super Bowl winning catch and saying, God did that for me. As if, you know, if you believe in a greater being, God is interested at all in talking to you group of clowns on the stage and you have some personal relationship. It's so utterly ridiculous. It's so untethered to reality. And you're right. It's exactly what Fox does. You know, it's exactly the game Fox plays.
I tweeted this, but you have to admit, weren't you relieved to find out that God was a guy? I mean, that was the one thing that I was like, oh, geez. I can't wait to tell.
That's a great point, too. Because, I mean, if God was a missus, God would be all emotional and stuff, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, I guess it was just sort of funny to hear them all just, you know, like, they kept calling him and he over and over again because they wanted to make it sound like they had a personal relationship. And then at one point, Megyn Kelly comes back with, I want to stop this parade of insanity because someone just asked me, what about our vets? So then she tries a mashup of the two questions. What would you do for our vets? And what would God think about it? Or something like that. There was some two-part.
What was that?
It was insanity.
That's why she didn't remind people that Santa Claus is white. Remember when she did that? Like a year ago?
That's right.
Yes. Cliff.
That was Michael. Michael insists that that Santa Claus is white. And now you've just taken things too far.
You know, what would have been a great question is, if Jesus was born where he was born, when he was born, can you explain how he looks like he does in all of the pictures you guys worship?
I think that's a good one. I think you could have said, like, now, what are your – do you think that Jesus came out of the cave alive after he was buried?
And speaking of that, by the way, exactly. And speaking of that, let's get to – I mean, I can't get off of this thing. It's tough. But let's sort of use that to jump to something else, which is Mike Huckabee. I mean, this is a dude who at one point in time, you know, was a Baptist preacher. I mean, and you think that originally when you get into that whole thing, you hope that people get into that because they actually believe in something. This is the guy who goes up on stage and says, our military is for killing things and breaking stuff. He's talking about pimps and prostitutes. What is wrong with that guy? I secretly think he's just, he's sitting at home late at night reading Hustler. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Now let's go. Should we start with the last debate first, or should we start with the first one first? Probably the first one first, which in some ways I think was more entertaining. And I got to say, watching that first debate and comparing it to the second debate, I think Rick Perry could be the most entertaining of all of them, because he's really the one who you just get that feeling of, like, this guy, like, he's always seems to be, like, literally, like, 30 seconds away for just saying, like, let me show you how I can do a one-handed push-up. And then he just rips his shirt off and gets on the floor and just like, I'm just going to show you how to do a one-handed push-up. Like, you could, there's nothing that he could do that makes you feel like you'd be surprised or would be like out of character for him. He is, I think, still whatever it was that he supposedly, you know, last time around they said he had back pain, and so he was heavily medicated, and I think his back's still hurting him. Let me put it that way.
Clearly he has back pain a lot. You want to party with that guy. There's no doubt about that. I mean, seriously, he's like George W. Bush times, you know, whatever. I mean, right? All the things that we laughed about with George W. Bush, like Rick Perry is sort of like a goofier, dumber, more good old boy, more simplistic, you know, more parochial version of Bush, which is amazing that there was a period in time when the third biggest state in this country was run by those two guys as governor and lieutenant governor. It's actually kind of amazing.
To be fair, and we have a bunch of Texans in the studio now, but my understanding is that the governor's role is pretty removed from the day-to-day operations.
Lieutenant governor does everything, I think, but just the fact that the top guy was, you know, Bush. In any case, that's neither here nor there. Texas, and we, you know, we love aspects of Texas, but we kind of expect this at this point from who they elect. But I'm just saying, yeah, I agree with you. Perry is just unbelievably entertaining. You know, like Trump. I mean, I actually enjoyed Trump on the stage
too. Oh, yeah. All right, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's stay in that the kids' table. Lindsey Graham also seemed to be medicated. And, I mean, what was amazing is he was asked about Planned Parenthood. And in the course of the 60-second response that they had, maybe they had 2 minutes. I'm not sure. I can't remember what the rules were. He had pivoted from Planned Parenthood to say that we should have troops on the ground in Iraq and we should move those troops into Syria. He managed to respond to Planned Parenthood and pivot to an invasion of Syria in the course of 90 seconds.
That dude could pivot from anything into starting a war. Would you like the red or the white wine tonight, sir? We should have our troops on the ground in Afghanistan, twice as many. We should be marching straight into Tehran right now. You know, I mean, he's a special guy, that Lindsey Graham.
I actually think that he's out in front. I mean, this is a guy who, and I guess you need to give him credit. At least he's not parroting everyone else in the party. I think you know, it's one thing to talk about how scary ISIS is and how ISIS is around the corner. And we got to get, I mean, this is literally the entire, I guess, prescription from the rest of, I think, you know, short of Rand Paul, every other Republican candidate is, we got to do more against ISIS, neglecting to note that we've had well over 1,000 bombing sorties against ISIS. We need to do more. We need to name them as radical extremists, Islamicists, I guess, because then they melt. I think that's the way it worked in Wizard of Oz. And that's it. But Lindsey Graham is actually talking about a full-on ground invasion. And I actually think that's not going to be popular even in the Republican Party. It's much better just to talk tough, because that's what's going to solve everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, you see it. And again, I know we want to stick to the earlier debate, but you see what happens in the Republican Party when you start, you know, talking wimpy like Rand Paul. Everybody just wants to go picking a fight with you if you even mention having, you know, following a constitutional order, you know, rule of law, that kind of thing, judicial warrants and the rest. That's what wimps do. You just bomb stuff. You break, as Mike Huckabee said, you kill people and you break stuff. That's what you do.
So, and then basically it was Carly Fiorina who came out of that debate, who was Well-spoken. She was a little bit catty up front with Clinton, but I imagine that went over quite well. She was well-spoken. I mean, she didn't particularly say much per se, but she said it well.
They're not judged on what they say; it's how they say it.
Right. Well, she that's the problem. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You had.
No, I mean, she came off as confident, and you know, I mean, that's what, I mean, you know, being full of bluster is what when she points in a Republican primary, and frankly, anywhere in Republican politics, we're us, they're them, we're right, they're wrong. The world is black and white. You know, if you say it with conviction, if you say it strongly, if you say it in an articulate way, you don't trip over your words. You know, that's what wins. And she did. She was pretty good with that. So yeah. I mean, I don't know that she helped herself in any real way because I don't think nearly as many people were watching.
Yes.
At 5 o'clock, and also I think that that whole group has already pretty much been written off because they're. I mean, you know, it's like when you get tracked in school early on, right? I mean, they are, as you put, you know, at the kiddies table at this point. So, but yeah, you know, certainly maybe she'll bump herself up from 0.5% to 1% a quarter.
Well, that's true. Although, you know, when you're talking about the bottom, like, let's say if you look at like the bottom 12 candidates, you're only talking about a couple of percentage points. Right. I mean,
Republican primary, Sam.
So it's not inconceivable that she could bump up, and she's certainly going to get talked about. Michael had made a prediction that he thought she was going to do well. And certainly I think there was an inclination by the press to see her do well so that they could sort of mix things up a little bit in the top 10. So we'll see. But I don't know how sustainable that is with the overshadowing of the second debate. And let's just start with Trump. We'll probably end up finishing there as well. But that's the thing that makes it so impossible, it seems to me, at least at this juncture, for any Republican candidate to really, I mean, maybe as we go along in the campaign, the ground game will make a difference. And maybe, right. Politicians who are more experienced will have hired the right people and will have already had a pre-existing organization, or Scott Walker is going to rely on the apparatus of the Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers. Jeb Bush is going to rely on all the allies from his father and his brother over the years. Maybe we'll see. Kasich will have friends from Congress and, has built a political organization before. That may
Maybe
make the difference.
Gay friends too. You know that, right?
That's what I understand. But Trump, the problem is that there's no differentiation in policy. And I think Trump addressed, you know, at least some of the stuff fairly well tonight in terms of what could ding him, the Clinton stuff, which I think he dealt with fairly well. Certainly his earlier positions, he quoted, he cited Reagan. And the thing is, he just delivers. You know what? He summed it up at the end.
He speaks Republican very well.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you don't have to give actual factual answers. Again, you just need to remain confident in yourself. You need to just pivot very easily from, oh, yeah, Hillary Clinton. sure. I just, I'm the guy who makes sure I give money so she shows up to my wedding. You know, get pictures with her. And then people laugh. And, I mean, he's really very good at doing that stuff. And that's what you need to do, you know, as Republicans. I mean, that's their specific art form.
When Jeb Bush said, we need to have people who are going to bring people together. Barack Obama was so divisive. I'm going to bring people together. And, you know, we need to not deliver these things with such bluster. And then Trump comes back and says, look, I don't have time to be PC. And we've got so many problems here. ISIS.
And chopping people's heads off.
And Mexico.
Dog and cats are living together. I don't get time for this.
Exactly. He threw it out. He's, Mexico, ISIS, and I can't even remember what the third one was, our deficit or debt. And so I don't have time to be PC. And he gets a big round of applause. because that is exactly, he is just simply playing on those Republican, you know, he's just playing on that ground. And I'll tell you something, the independent pledge up front, which I think a lot of Republicans thought was going to be so devastating, again, it just gives him an opportunity to be strong in front of these people. And he's, you know, he's not going to lose.
Do I trust anything in Frank Luntz's focus group? Again, most of those people are, you know, many peas short of a pod. But at the same time, these are Republican-based voters. So, you know, and they seem to be offended by that whole thing. I mean, that was, to me, the thing that just, I almost had trouble when I really was tempted to stab my eyes out. When all these people were just debating with each other, like, yeah, well, you know, Trump isn't good. He may run as independent. And then some lady yells from the back of her, he didn't say that, did he? And, you know, and they're all having, like, this conversation that I can imagine my 8 and my 5-year-old having. And in the end, you know, so it did seem in that little focus group to hurt Trump a little bit. I don't know that I believe
it. You're talking about, just to be clear, you're talking about the Fox, the post-debate Frank Luntz group. Look, I don't buy it. And I'll tell you why. Frank Luntz knows that question is going to be asked. That was a very strategic question to ask Trump up front. And people are forgetting that, you know, I think the base of the Republican Party, a big part of them, at least like to think that they are willing not to vote for a Republican. I mean, when you hear people usually refer to themselves as an independent, and that shifted a little bit because you actually people who I think have moved to the left of Democrats on in certain instances. But for the most part, when you hear people say they're independent, they're just people who vote Republican all the time, but like to pretend that they're not partisan. And and I think, you know, look, all Trump has to do, and I think he knows this.
Most independents these days are just people that don't want to admit they belong to a party. Every poll shows that they lean heavily towards one party or the other. But
I think that that Trump is, you know, happy to maintain his 20%. He'll maintain 20% until March, you know, essentially around Super Tuesday. He will then say, I've been maligned by the Republican Party. And if he leaves, he say, you know what, I'm going to probably run as an independent. He'll make a lot of Republicans come and, you know, eat pizza with them or whatever it is that he does. And maybe he runs as an independent. I don't know. But I think go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, look, my sense again, and I've said this already, so I'm repeating myself. My sense is that if you speak with conviction and you utter sort of platitudes, but you say them with confidence and you say them with some bluster and you get a little, you know, you get Reagan in there and you get a shot at somebody in there of some sort, you win these things because that's what, especially, I mean, sadly, I think that's what many Americans are looking for, but certainly overall, that's what the Republican base is looking for completely and nothing else. And so they're judging this stuff. It's all personality. It's a high school election. And on that, you know, I would say, and I'm interested to see what you think about this, that to me, the person who I felt like lost the most from tonight was Scott Walker.
Really?
He's not articulate. Yeah, I do. I don't find him to be as articulate and confident. I mean, whatever bullshit they're full of, they're all full of it. And to me, Trump and Christie, Kasich, these are guys, you know, that know that what they know and they know they're right. And they see, I thought Jeb Bush came out a little bit stronger than I expected.
Really?
That he would. Yeah, I mean, just in terms of that stuff, yeah. But clearly you disagree, so.
Well, I mean, it's not dramatic. I just think the biggest loser tonight, frankly, from my perspective, was Jeb Bush. Because this is the guy who's supposed to be, right? He's supposedly the real front runner. And
well, yeah, the expectations game, that may be, you're right. If you're playing that may have hurt Jeb in the end.
Did this guy look like a heavyweight out there? Did he look like he's somebody who could dispatch? I mean, he didn't look to me, never mind Trump, all right, because they all pretend like Trump is some type of Trump is some type of flash in the pan. He's going to definitely go away. And the question is, who's going to everyone going to coalesce around? I'll tell you something. My sense was you put Jeb Bush in a room with Ted Cruz and with, you know, Kasich or I don't know, even Rubio on some level. And Jeb Bush is going to come out. He's going to just get eaten alive, it felt like.
Yeah, well, Rubio, I think, is, you know, when he gets the chance, actually has a lot of charisma. And he's strong in his presentation. And I think he's somebody who definitely, I agree with you. I think he's another one I would add to that list who I think came out strong.
He was as good as I've seen him, I would say.
I'm sorry?
Rubio was as good as I've seen him. But let's go down the list. Let's do this. So Jeb Bush, we obviously different perspectives on there. Scott Walker, I didn't think that he was stellar, but I don't think he made a fool of himself at any point.
No, he didn't make a fool of himself. He just, I think, gave very kind of – he didn't give that strong, blustery performance that I think matters more to Republicans. He wasn't a man's man, so to speak. So – because remember, and I'm comparing it to where he is. I mean, he right now is either the leader or in second place after Trump in Iowa. And I'm interested to see if he maintains that status. I think Kasich, I think Christie, I think Rubio, for example, all three of them came across much stronger than he did tonight.
And Ted, I would say, all right, well, let's go down. Ben Carson, let's just it was. Well, let me just, as long as we're talking about Scott Walker, hold on. Let me say one thing about Scott Walker. I thought it was really interesting, very telling, because, you know, who Fox is really sort of backing here is pretty important. And obviously, I think it's not just one person. But the first question to Scott Walker was, are you really this pro-life was essentially the question. And this was the round where they're supposedly hitting everybody, right? Trump, will you take the pledge? Marco Rubio, are you qualified? Ben Carson, are you dumb? These were all the questions. Mike Huckabee, are you too Christian? And really, with Scott Walker, it's like, are you legitimately that pro-life? And he's like, yes.
And he said he was. I mean, right. Sure. So mom's got to die. Mom's got to die.
Right.
You know? I mean, if that's not footage that can be used eventually, if he is the nominee, I don't know what is. I mean, that's what he said in the end. It's very clear. You're a mother, and you are potentially going to be a mother. You're pregnant, and you are going to die if you don't terminate your pregnancy. In Scott Walker's America, you die.
That's right.
I mean, it's very good. That's it. That's what he said.
And going to help him in the Republican Party, I think, particularly in terms of what he needs, which is to sort of activate some of that, the sort of the hardcore Christian right. It was interesting, too. I mean, I guess I'm going backwards, but with Donald Trump, his sort of difficult question from Megyn Kelly was, you've said some horrible things to women. And Trump said, well, let's be honest, it was only Rosie O'Donnell, and gets a huge applause from the audience. That is like the perfect example. And then you had Chris Wallace looking for everybody to criticize Trump on, I think it was immigration, and no one would. No one would criticize him. In fact, I don't think Trump was criticized by anybody but Rand Paul up front about the Clintons. And then Trump said, I gave you money.
Which is pretty funny. Hey,
you're not doing very good tonight.
Rand Paul, that was the only time I think anybody really went after Trump. I think Jeb Bush might have, when he said that, about divisiveness, and Trump, as you said, answered that very well. Like, with all the terrible things out there, but I need to be tough. I mean, that's what I mean. That's what wins the debate for Republicans, and that's why I think Walker did not do himself any favors. He didn't have a Rosie O'Donnell line. You know what I mean? He didn't have a line like that. He didn't have a line like Chris Christie saying, you know, well, you're maybe just blowing hot air sitting there in your Washington committee, you know? At least that I saw, Scott Walker didn't have any of those lines where he demonized some group of people in a way that they find really funny and sort of show that he was a tough guy.
Yeah, I don't know that Scott Walker did any favors. I don't know that he hurt himself. I really do feel like Jeb Bush hurt himself.
I think others could rise at his, and he could stay the same at his expense.
That's true.
What I'm saying.
Ben Carson, I think, is going to be one of those guys who's going to add a point or two. because this guy manages to deliver the flat tax, but say that God, it's tithing, that it's really, it's not just a flat tax, it's flat tax plus God, which, of course, I mean, if you're going to have a tax, you want God to be administering it.
Of course.
I mean, he can...
God could totally take over the IRS.
Think of what the budget would be if it was God, because he wouldn't need the computers. He knows already who's been naughty or nice. The whole thing...
Santa Claus.
Is that Santa Claus? No, wait a second. Are God and Santa Claus different people? That should have been the final question of the debate. Are God and Santa Claus different people? So, and Ben Carson also...
We can all agree they're both white.
Pro-torture. Yes, they're both white. Pro-torture, which is going to go over well. He also, I don't know if you picked up on this, he basically said that Obama was a Manchurian candidate whose agenda was to get in, completely destroy the United States from within, and then just sort of march off into the sunset, having mission accomplished, I've weakened the United States. He didn't say Obama by name, but I think it certainly registered with the lunatic fringe.
He was the one who I think changed the most from beginning to end. Because in the beginning, I didn't think he was very strong at all. I thought he was lost a little bit and didn't seem to sort of, you know, he was sort of babbling a bit. But in those later questions and lines, especially on race, if you think about it from the perspective of what, again, the Republican base wants to hear, he was perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, the brain's the same. I've seen him, you know. No difference. So knowing that, there can't be a race problem, right? he gave simplistic answers in the end, but he used his background as a surgeon, you know, same with the Siamese twins answer and half a brain, and, you know, he made sure to get that jab in at Washington. You know, I was the first one to take half a brain out, but you'd think going to Washington, I wasn't, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's what plays well. So I think he changed the most from beginning to end, because in the beginning I thought he wasn't very good, but I think he ended very strong.
Yeah, and Ted Cruz, I thought, I think the guy is a sociopath. I think he comes off as a sociopath, and that's why I think he probably went up in the polls tonight. After the Republican Party, I mean,
well,
the
that
debate.
One line where he just basically says, you know, at one point it was towards the end where he just said everything was like the kitchen sink line. You know what I mean? Where he's like, I'm going to go and, you know, no one's going to start wars with us. I'm going to destroy them and I'm going to end abortion. You know, we're going to get rid of all these decisions. You know, his day one line.
Yes, that's actually, that prompted me to.
His first day in office would be like 12,000 hours long. Everything he said he was going to do the first day. He was like, every right wing. He touched every way. He was like, I'm going to get rid of taxes. I'm going to get rid of abortions. I'm going to stop the gay marriages. He's going to do everything the first time.
The Iran deal. That line actually prompted me to write on Twitter, all of the Republican candidates are going to have to take a huge nap on day two. because everything is happening on day one with these guys. That's what's amazing. Everything is going to happen on day one. He also said, I think he's going to destroy ISIS in 90 days. But, you know.
Nice. Impressive.
90 days. That's pretty good. Let's see. And then we had that big fight between Rand Paul and Chris Christie, where Rand Paul managed to put the hug line in there. That was.
Yeah, that's right. They each got a nice Republican-type line in there.
Yep.
A nice jab in there. So Rand Paul did at least strike back. But still, I think, you know, I think in the end, Rand Paul stuff is just. It's not fierce enough in foreign policy for Republicans. So
yeah, I agree. In fact, I'm convinced that he is, in many respects, running. He is in that race just to run for the Senate in Kentucky. As you know, I think three of his sort of, I don't know if they're fully inner circle, but part of his the machine that he. Inherited from his father, from Ron Paul. Three of those guys were indicted surrounding the Ron Paul campaign's bribing of an Iowa official to support Ron Paul's campaign back in 2012. And that'll be interesting to follow because Scott Walker also, it just came out the other day, I think it was a Freedom of Information request. I'm not exactly how this document was released, But it turns out that despite what Scott Walker was saying, that in 2012 that he was not the subject a John Doe an investigation, it turns out that he was the subject of an investigation. That did not catch up with him tonight. And John Kasich, let's go to Kasich. I mean, Kasich definitely benefited, in my estimation, from this being in Ohio.
He benefited from that. He's a very strong, you know, he's very articulate. He's a strong debater. And he's very good at sort of, you know, taking a position that you don't think someone will take when they're up there. You know, it's kind of like the telling it like it is, you know, kind of presentation. You know, I would do this. Here's why. But he's very good at sort of explaining that away. You know, I don't believe in gay marriage, but I have a gay friend. I love my daughter, you know, no matter what. It's unconditional love, the way she loves me. Wouldn't you love your daughter that way? You know, that kind of stuff. And what do you say to that? I mean, that's a very good answer if you give it sort of in a confident way. I mean, he certainly probably would have sounded the best to most Democrats watching, too.
Yeah, well, his stuff on Medicaid expansion, his stuff on saying that in terms of the economy, we've got to help. I mean, he made a point at one point, I think it was in talking about the economy. He said, we have to rise everybody up. We have to rise up minorities. We have to rise up others who feel like they've been left behind. And that is a statement that if it wasn't Kasich saying that, would get booze. But he pushes it, and Michael just IM'd me this.
It's an inclusive, because, you know, it's still probably, you know, supply-side economics, but he makes it.
You know what it is? It's compassionate conservatism.
That's right.
That's what it is.
The line on gay marriage was perfect, compassionate conservatism. No, I'm a traditional kind of guy. Even couches it in that.
Yep.
So he doesn't couch it in hate like the other ones do, when you can literally see like Ted Cruz seething over gay marriage, or Mike Huckabee ready to go break up a gay marriage with a shotgun if he has to. You know what I mean?
Well, there's prostitutes and all that type of stuff.
What did you say?
There's prostitutes and pimps and all that type of thing.
Yeah, gay marriages, they're everywhere too.
Right.
You never know. And, you know, you might even need to bring the army in to kill people and break stuff with gay weddings.
Something weird happened to Mike Huckabee in his time in New York with all the cussing women and the prostitutes and the pimps.
Yeah. It was tough for him. It was tough on him. I think that's where Kasich, just to finish up on him, that's where he's at his best.
Yeah.
Because he's not sitting there and saying it out of hate. He sounds more inclusive. And yet he's very conservative. It's just, the Republican Party has shifted so ridiculously that saying, you know, supporting Medicaid and being against gay marriage, but saying, you know, I'll still be friends with somebody if they're gay and they do get married, you know, that makes you a moderate. And he couches it in the right language, religious language, you know, or just solid language of strength. And, and that's why, he's we'll have to see what happens. He concerns me, because if you've lived in his state and you've seen stuff, a lot of that job stuff he was bragging about was the economy improving, by the way, and, you know, looking into it, if there had been a question that he'd had to answer about the fact that there's an enormous investigation in his Department of Education because charter schools that were so deregulated in Ohio that essentially they were handed over public school money and it disappeared places, and it was for non-performing schools, and when these guys handed in the records of schools, they made sure to not hand in the parts where kids were getting Fs. I mean, the whole thing is a huge scandal. People are resigning. People might be indicted, you know, and there's obviously other things where that came from, but that could be an enormous issue for him. So, I mean, as long as he doesn't have to answer for stuff like that, he sounds terrific. You know what I mean? Because he doesn't lead with social issues. He does also, you know, he doesn't have to lead with the fact that he's been passing unbelievably right-wing laws when it comes to outlawing abortion in Ohio and attacking women's rights when it comes to, you know, he does it in the budget amendment process so that he can do it kind of quietly.
Right.
Right, while people aren't paying attention. So then suddenly he's forcing an ultrasound on you and making sure you have to wait 40 hours, you know, and go to one of these fake people to counsel you, and all this other crap that they're doing, which has shut down a number of abortion clinics and essentially put Ohio at this point, a swing state, on par with Texas and other states when it comes to that. And then, you know, another issue, which you know is important, that I talk about a lot on guns. He's put guns in bars. He signed that legislation. He supported legislation because, as you know, if you're going to carry a gun around in public, 8 hours of training is very onerous. So he lowered that to 2. You know, I mean, things like that that the NRA wants. But he doesn't lead with those issues, and that's
right.
The thing. If he has to, in a general election, if he has to answer for that record on social issues, on charters and stuff, we're looking at a different ballgame. But you know, the Democrats will have to be smart, and they'll have to make sure he has to answer for those issues. Because what he did tonight, very impressive, and sounds very good to Democrats, I think.
Yeah, and I think, and you know, my understanding, too, is that he has made some big inroads into the African-American community in Ohio.
Yes.
And that helped him in his governor races. I mean, it remains to be seen if he can break through. But I got to say that when you see how weak, you know, there's one part also of cases that people forget, that when he talks about his private sector experience, it's Lehman Brothers. And so, you know, this is not a guy who doesn't know how to walk through those corridors. And I think, you know, he hits all the bases. So when you see Jeb Bush, like, you know, I just got to think, like, if I'm a guy who is a pioneer, you know, I'm someone who's supposed to raise $100,000, $500,000, whatever it is, for the Republican Party. And I see Jeb Bush, I'm thinking, like, this could be a waste of my money. This could be a waste of my time. I mean, I'm not going to get this ambassadorship if I support Jeb Bush and it ends up being Kasich. I mean, I think I'm a little worried at this point if I'm a Jeb Bush supporter. I think he's the
one. I agree with that. I think I'll temper what I originally said, because I think if you compare it to expectations, and you have to, then it becomes a little bit different, you know, than not falling over.
You know, I think this is it's going to be interesting to see what the spin is over the next couple of days. Carly Fiorina tonight was trending on Twitter. I don't know, you know, what can be read into that. You know, I don't even know.
You know, Sam, I don't know how long until we get off the phone here or you kick me off of the show. So I want to make sure that we don't end without mentioning that, you know, what else happened tonight. Of course, in the dark of night while that debate was going on, right?
John Stewart gave
his
lesson.
Well, there was John Stewart. There's also Chuck Schumer coming out against the Iran deal.
Oh, no, I didn't hear that.
Ah, see? That you didn't hear that because that was Chuck Schumer's game to do that while the debate was on. So we'll wake up to that tomorrow.
Wow. So this is going to be tricky. I mean, the real question is you know, can President Obama veto it and withstand a veto override challenge? I think Michael said
because Schumer gives some of the other sort of, you know, whatever you want to call them, hawks, semi-hawks, he gives them cover. I mean, there's no doubt.
Right.
So I'm talking about the Democratic side, obviously.
Right. I mean, that's where this is all going to play out. I mean, the real question is, does Schumer vote against it but not vote against the override? I don't know.
That's true.
I don't know.
I'd love to have more details, but that's the story right now. And I don't know if other Democrats yet, if any other Democrat had come out against it. I'm not aware of anyone.
In the House, not
no,
in the
I'm
Senate.
No, I'm talking about the Senate.
Right.
Did any Democratic senator come out against it?
Not to my knowledge. I feel like, was it Carper?
That's what you're worried about, because Coons kind of came out and said he would be for it, although he doesn't love it. The same with Gillibrand and some of the others, you know. But, you know, what happens now with, because of what Schumer did, what happens with both of those from Delaware, what happens with Mark Warner, what happens with Manchin, you know, what happens with Menendez, Feinstein, I don't know. He gives a lot of cover to people who are a little more hawkish on foreign policy if they want to find it out. I'm just saying. So I'd be a little more concerned over there if I were them.
I can't.
Which they probably are.
I don't see. I don't see anything yet on Carper. I think the last thing he released was when was that? Back in July. That's April 2000. That's April 2015. But he had a press release on July 14th. As well. So I imagine he is still on the fence. I mean, if he hasn't come out with something recent.
Well, and again, I've just seen headlines, so I didn't have time to read. So, I mean, it seems it's pretty definitive, but there's always a chance that...
With Schumer. There was some piece the other day where he got a lot of grief, apparently, from his, I guess, presumably, Jewish donors in New York. And
yeah, you New York Jews.
Yeah, tell me about it. Tell me about it. I'm sucked into an email chain so deep you can't even imagine with some folks. But all right, so I think you know we've hit all that, Cliff, and obviously the build up to this was big. It's amazing. When you heard nothing about trade, I mean, that's the problem with having Fox sort of set the debate standards. It's all played on territory that they're interested. I'm surprised we didn't hear anything about people's position on, you know, killer sharks or something like that.
killer sharks with lasers?
Yeah, I mean...
They missed that. How we didn't hear about Benghazi and Solyndra?
We only heard about Benghazi once, and that was, it was Huckabee. Yeah,
that's right. He mentioned, but I don't think. But there were no questions specifically. No, about,
no. It was all
Solyndra, Fast and Furious, and every other made-up thing that they're freaked out about. Right, Jade Helm, the rest.
We did not hear anything about Jade Helm, which was also sort of disappointing. Let me just. I'm looking up here. The next debate is going to be. In over a month from now, maybe something else will come up. Hugh Hewitt will be the moderator. Unfrickin' believable. Oh, my God. It will be at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. This is going to be nauseating.
Oh, my God. I have to make sure most of the Republican men on stage aren't touching themselves.
There will be the debate will be divided into
Ronald
two parts.
Reagan.
One grouping will feature the top 10 candidates, and then they will be the losers again. Then in October, CNBC will be the least partisan, but CNBC, then Fox Business. We won't see a CNN debate until December 15th, and that will be in Nevada. And who knows at that point, there probably will only be like 14 candidates in the Republican Party. At that point, you may wish
maybe
to be in the kids' table.
By then.
Yeah, who knows? Cliff, I really appreciate your staying up to all hours of the evening / morning. To talk about it. Did we leave anything on the table? Did we forget anything?
I don't know. Did we miss anybody? They're all so exciting. I'm trying to think if there's any. I think we covered them all, right? Covered everything.
I think we did indeed. And, you know, over the next couple of days. Now, remember, also...
You know what? One other interesting thing I think I'll mention, which was kind of fun, which was, I think it was national, right? I mean, I'm in South Carolina right now, so I assume this is a national thing where they had that an ad the NRA paid for hitting Bloomberg on guns.
I didn't see that because we didn't watch that stream, but that was interesting.
What was fascinating about that was you were sort of like, because they were saying Bloomberg might run for president, that was sort of their premise on hitting him, which I haven't heard any of for a long time now. But what was interesting is not long after that, almost as if it was planned, let's just say, Fox had their question for Jeb Bush about how he could sit on the Bloomberg Foundation when they gave so much money to the evil, dreaded Planned Parenthood. It's almost as if this hit on Bloomberg was planned so that then you could say, hey, Jeb Bush, didn't you sit on that foundation board of Bloomberg's?
You're not suggesting that Fox would do something like that, would Cliff?
Never, ever, ever would Fox do something like that, but... I'm just, coincidences happen in life. It's crazy.
Just a reminder, going into this weekend, most of the candidates we saw, I don't know how many, if it's going to be 10, 15, are going to be at the Red State Convention in Georgia. And Eric Erickson is going to be moderating a panel with them. a week ago, it was controversial as to whether or not he was going to challenge each candidate to pledge to shut down the government over the Planned Parenthood videos, I guess.
Right.
And but I think that they all seem to agree that the government should shut down and that we should invade Syria. I mean, I think that's basically it. Shut down the government,
right?
Invade Syria.
I think John McCain actually came out in favor of it to give Lindsey Graham cover.
Yes, indeed. Well, not just to give Lindsey Graham cover. Let's also remember that John McCain, and you said this the other day, John McCain is...
That's true. His right-wing primary in his state, too. He's got to worry about that.
His approval ratings are not very good, particularly with conservatives in his state, and so he's in trouble.
And I always say this, you know, the first, it's great. I mean, you know, I'm forgetting my own points here, but I should tell you something. That, you know, when I wrote the book on McCain back in 08, and I went there, those were the first hints that I got of this kind of Tea Party uprising, you know, before there was a name for it that was coming in place. I mean, I think the heart of it, you know, were in some of these places like Arizona, where they were already, the Republican Party there was trying to censor McCain, and they wanted to challenge him from the right. And I could understand, you know, they hated John Kyle, too, who's a former Republican senator who was so right-wing, in my, you know, to me, from Arizona. And I couldn't understand. I'm like, how could they not? What is it, you know, what's further to the right than that? But it was over, like, believe, you know, any believing in background checks for guns, back when that was, many Republicans supported that. There was time that was a very mainstream Republican position, like many others that have changed. And believing in global warming, you know, is not a conspiratorial big government plot. And, you know, that's when the sort of the field goal, the posts were being moved, let's put it that way. And I interviewed some of these people out there, you know, including a relative of Barry Goldwater's, who's still very right-wing, and some other people in the Republican Party, because I couldn't understand what it was that they hated McCain so much for. And so, well, I guess what I'm saying is, and, you know, then you start hearing all those positions when they became mainstream coming as a Tea Party. So this has been a long-time feud out there. And they tried to go after McCain with J.D. Hayworth last time, and he just was a buffoon who couldn't do it. So, it was, you know, they may try to go after him, and it looks like they are with someone else. And you're right, he had to move to the right on that, probably for that reason, too, because just 2 years ago, when they were going to shut the government down over the debt ceiling, he said that they were basically crazy, you know, called Ted Cruz a wacko bird, whatever that means.
Right.
And called it irresponsible to shut the government down. But that's what my whole book was about, because that's the Johnny McCain that I learned all about, which is... There's no position he can take one day that 2 years later he can't just as forcefully take the opposite position and have a great justification for why, you know, and not make it, it's not about political expediency, which it always is.
Well, flexibility is always nice. It's always nice to be flexible. Cliffy, as always, a real pleasure. Again, thanks for staying up late with me, and we will see you next Friday, same place. Well, actually, different time, in a different place. More or less, people listen to it where they want to listen to it. All right, Cliff.
Yeah, good point.
See you next week.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Take care, buddy.
All right, folks. That is the program for today. Members, you have available to you our running commentary of the Kids Table debate. Enjoy that. Freebies and members, you have available to you another podcast of the entire Republican debate at the adult, so-called adult table. If you have not listened to the debates at this point, good time to go back. And you can send us an email and say, hey, you missed this, you missed that, that type of thing.
And just a note, if you're a YouTube watcher, while we deal with the Fox takedown stuff on the back end, we'll have to be streaming from our YouTube.com/MajorityReportLive username. So when you come here Monday to watch the live stream, it's going to be YouTube.com/MajorityReportLive. And that's going to be for at least a few days while we deal with the live stream banning issue, thanks to Fox.
Big applause button, which I can't push because I've got to push the song. And thank you to Noah. It is his final moments here as an intern. And Noah's family, who came in tonight and brought us all sorts of beverages. Matt some sugar water that he's been suckling on. And Michael is, I don't know, he's going to have to be carried out of here. He's so intoxicated. All this food. Thank you, guys. It was really great to meet you. Thank you so much for coming in. Noah's brother is here. He's been sitting quietly, enjoying Noah having to do push-ups and all the jumping jacks. All right, folks, Matt and Mike Monday, and I will be back on Tuesday. Have a great weekend. See you later.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know I'm gonna get there. I was looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light. Choice was made for the option where you don't get paid.